Blog Talk Radio.
Aloha, ladies and gentlemen. I was going to say, instead of aloha, ladies and gentlemen, I just watched the South Park movie again, and I was going to say something like so much nastier, because I got Terrence and Philip on the brain. Sorry we didn't start right away, but sometimes your dog barfs in the corner. I don't have a dog, so you're going to have to patiently wait to find out whose dog barfed in the corner. But in the meantime, we should talk about wrestling and not dogs barfing, because that's what we do. I might be kind of amped, folks, tonight. I have had three Sprites today. That is the amount of Sprite that I've had in the last 5 years. Don't know what made me have three Sprites. Don't know why I got a fourth one sitting next to me. We're going to find out together, folks. Your main event, Wesley versus Johnny Gargano versus Cameron Grimes versus Bronson Reed. This one went 17:09. Kind of a weird match where we had one guy fighting for something and three guys fighting for nothing. Wesley, if he won, he would get a match with Dirty Dominic Mysterio to try to regain his North American championship. But the other three guys, they were just part of a plan by Dominic to keep Wesley from getting a match with him. Weird, because a couple of these guys are baby faces, so why would they go along with this? What do they have to gain here? I don't know. All that aside, this match could not have been much more fun. The right kind of mess, an elegant mess. Wesley wins this spot fest in 17 minutes and 9 seconds. A fun story with Bronson Reed getting his big boy spots in time after time, and all three guys having to chop him down before the next time that he gets back into it 3 minutes down the line. Finally, the rest of them going at it. Grimes takes out, let's say, Gargano with the cave-in. Yes, and Wesley picks the bones on Grimes with
cardiac
kick, and he wins, and he gets his match, and there was much rejoicing. What did I say?
Sorry, you cut out.
Did I not say cardiac?
No, you just cut out for a bit, so I didn't hear anything.
Okay, I definitely did, so good to know that we're going to have audio issues as well as barfing issues tonight. Anyway, did I mention, folks, I'm Kelly Wells. You can find me on social media at SpookyMilk or at SpookyMilk.games. Bruce Lee Hazelwood, who are you, and what do you think about Wesley winning that main event?
Well, Kelly told you who I am. You can find me at @_Lee253. I've seen some talk on the former Twitter tonight that the main event was a match of the year contender. I wouldn't go that far. It was a fine match for me. It's hard to have a match of your contender that has a commercial break through half of the match, but also I just don't know if it got to that standard that you would want for a match of your contender. Not to say it wasn't a good match. It was a fun match. Probably better for us than for Kelly, because he was typing out the report. But like you said, Bronson Reed had his spots. Gargano had a spot. Cameron Grimes had his spots, which is good for him because he hasn't had really any time on TV in a long time. So it was good to see that. I guess it really was just a way to, for one, get Wesley a big victory over three former champions, and then extend the story between Bronson Reed and Ivar, because that really took him out of the match. And as you were saying, the big question I had is why is Wesley the only one who gets to face Dominic Mysterio if he wins? I think even brought this up on commentary towards the end of the match, but this just is one of those things where I need to hear from. Maybe he said it, but he was so bland on commentary, I didn't really pay attention to him. But what did he actually do to convince these three to come to this with no stakes for them involved and wrestle in this match for Dominic Mysterio, who, as he said, beat pretty much all of them? So that's a little bit of the storytelling I think they missed. They could just, 10-15 seconds, just give a quick explanation from Dom. Now, what I did like were the videos throughout the night highlighting each of the three returning champions, how they won it, their time in NXT, what it means for them to be champion, and to be in that match. It, again, not having the stakes involved did kind of take away from it, but at least gave you a reminder of who they were coming into the match. And as you said in your report, the person who had the stakes is who we thought was going to win, and that's who won. So he's most likely going to get the title back from Dom at Deadline. And, you know, Dom is probably done with NXT. There's a lot of stuff going on with Judgment Day right now on Raw that they probably need to focus on more. So I'm thinking it's going to be hopefully a clean 1-2-3, but with a Dom match, it's probably going to have some shenanigans involved with Judgment Day or something. And then Wesley will somehow pull it out and emerge victorious at Deadline.
Nate, if you're back, go ahead. And if you're not, give me no sign.
I'm here. I'm definitely here. That it was definitely my dog that threw up in the corner. We were just about to go on air, and I hear the sound. I turn around and say, oh, crap. So sorry about that, everybody. But we're here. We're here to talk NXT now, so it's fine. The main event. Okay. If it doesn't hit Match of the Year contender, I don't know. I mean, I guess it could potentially be in the conversation. I might be just biased. This match was just so much fun for me. Cameron Grimes, Johnny Gargano, two of my favorites to come through NXT. Wesley became one of my favorites after a long story. You know, anybody that's been listening to the show for long enough, they knew, Wesley, when he was part of MSK, I was not a fan. I wasn't a big fan of him. They just didn't do it for me. The whole story that Wesley went through to become one of the greatest, arguably greatest NXT North American champions of all time, really, really captured me. And then Bronson Reed. I like Bronson Reed. He's not one of my favorites, but like, hey, I'm glad to see him come back in NXT and get a moment to shine. And obviously, as we already said, kind of progressed that storyline with Ivar from last night and all of that. Nothing against Bronson Reed. Love the guy, but the other two are, have always resonated more with me. So there's that. So like I said, I'm biased. I just thought this match was just a ton of fun to see them come back, to get their spot, their moments in the spotlight, if you will. I mean, this match was pretty much primed to set up. Let me start that again. This match was primed to set Wesley up for success here, in my opinion. I didn't see him see anybody else walking away victorious here. I gave it maybe like a 10-15% chance they'd throw us a curveball or, you know, something like that, and somebody might, somebody else might win, but Once they said on commentary that, you know, the other guys, if one of them won, they didn't necessarily get a shot. It was like, oh, well, okay. I don't know. I for some reason that cemented it for me. I guess that could have, now that I think about it, I mean, I guess maybe that could have meant it was going to go either way. But for me, I don't know. As soon as they said that, I was like, yeah, Wesley's going to win. 100%. I dug the finish. I dug the match. There's a couple of the spots where, you know, all four guys need to work together kind of to, those Tower of Doom-esque spots and things like that. They're fun. You got to suspend your disbelief a little more than usual with them, but whatever, they're fun. They kind of take me out of the moment, but whatever. They still kind of like, whoa, feats of strength and coordination and skills. So I'll give them that. So overall, I dig this. I dig the build that got us here. Can't think of anything else to say other than I got to go back to just quick cleaning my rug real quick, and I'll be right back.
Cool. You can call us at 515-605-9345. We got Brian from Phoenix with his hand up, so let's say hey. And Brian, if you've been unmuted, then go ahead and let us know what's on your mind.
Hi, Mr. Kelly Wells. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Brian Olson. How are you?
I'm doing great, Kelly. Thank you for asking, Kelly. I really appreciate that, Kelly.
For anyone who doesn't know, this is a continuation of what happened after Survivor Series when he called in, and it was Greg's show, so he was calling me Greg. But I thought he was just ribbing me, so it's all good. Go ahead, Brian.
And I mentioned also, I knew it was you, Kelly, because I even referenced Dakota Kai and things like that. So nice. I knew it was you, but it's just for some reason Greg was flowing out. I do apologize to you. Sincerely, I do apologize to you. You know that I obviously by our interaction, I totally respect you.
Greg's a great guy. So if I got to be called somebody who is not my name, I will take Greg. So no harm done.
I agree too, Doc Bruce. Hopefully you're having a great night, and I know Nate's cleaning up some stuff. So I'll make it pretty quick. Here in Phoenix, Kelly, you probably remember that, at least Mike Cox Cable, I don't have an East Coast feed. So NXT hasn't even started yet. I'm looking at your report right now. Really good job on your report. I have two things I'm going to bring up, and I'll bring them both up pretty quick. So, Kelly, thanks a lot for putting in that they showed again Boa and Dante Chen in the background. And I think this time they were with Inofi and Blade where they were behind them. And it seemed – I don't know if it happened last week. I was trying to watch last week to see if I could catch them last week. I wasn't sure if I did see them. But over the last couple of weeks, and Doc Bruce, you've said this in your reports as well too, how we've seen Boa – in full face paint, and over the weeks, Dante Chen slowly putting on face paint. So I really like that technique. I mean, you know, of course, it's staring us right in the face or hitting us in the face with it. But I want to get both of you and Nate to both of your opinions on that. Then I have another question after that.
Okay, so this podcast is extremely pro Dante Chen. So I think we're very happy to see that that the guy's got something to do, period. I have liked the way that they've told the story in the background. Not one of the scenes has been theirs, and yet an entire story has been told in the background. Worked our way toward a tag team, created a tag team just in little moments in the back. They are now wearing the matching face paint, the face paint that Boa has been wearing for actually years now. a few times he's been on TV. I don't know where to expect these guys to slot in. Neither of them have ever slotted very high as singles guys. But I've got my hopes that they'll find some wins, but it's going to be tough in a stacked division. Although that stacked division has gotten a little bit less stacked as the Creeds are one foot out the door, maybe both feet out the door. I like what they've done with that. I don't know if we're supposed to talk about what else was going on in that scene, but let me throw to the person who I know is not cleaning up stuff to give Nate a few more seconds. Bruce, go ahead.
Oh, then I need to extend my thoughts on this because I was just going to pretty much say we like Dante Chen a lot. Any more Dante Chen on TV, there's a good thing. But since you didn't give Nate more, I'll just add that, yeah, I do like how they've been. It isn't just this story that they've told in the background. NXT has done this before, and I like how they do keep doing it because it gives people a way not just to be on TV, but to also extend stories. It's not just like they're in the background of the locker room scene where Roxanne Perez and whoever it was got into a little fight. It's not like they're just in the viewing room and sitting in the back. They're actually doing something. They're advancing something, and they're creating characters and, like you said, a team. And it's just a nice, subtle way, a pretty easy way if you think about it and if you know where you're going to have people on TV for a brief moment while others are also on TV and extend those stories. So, yeah, I just really like how they're doing this. And it's good to see Boa back on TV more, and hopefully this time it sticks, and having Dante Chen as your partner is definitely going to help with that, not just in terms of character, but everything, because Dante Chen is amazing.
Yeah. I am here.
So, but hey, thank you for giving me a couple extra seconds there. I am going to need to bust out the rug shampooer at some point, but I don't need to give it, go into details. I don't know why I'm going into details, whatever. Dante Chen, yeah, going to get a lot of love from us here. Same with Boa. I mean, you know, oh God, but I can't remember the name of the, thank you. Tian Sha was fantastic in, as far as I'm concerned. So, got a little weird towards the end and, you know, fizzled out, never really came to fruition, but I really liked what it could have been. Besides the point, I really don't have anything to add from kind of what you guys are already saying. I like the way they're telling a story in the background of other segments. It's almost like maximizing your TV time and your screen real estate for that matter. I mean, you think of, you know, the frame, your camera, that the frame is like a canvas, right? So it's like, if you've got another story that you can be telling in the background at the same time, why not? I mean, I wouldn't do it all the time, but like, I dig it. I think this is something that it's something we've seen them do in the past. Rhea Ripley and Drew McIntyre on the main roster very recently come to mind. I think it was about the same time we actually started seeing Dante Chen and Boa in the background, but, you know, give or take. And they've done in the past too, but I dig it. As far as what they could maybe do with this tag team, I'm thinking maybe something, and I don't mean a comedy tag team like Breezango, but maybe Breezango level, where maybe once in a while they get a win, but probably isn't going to amount to anything. Actually, Breezango, they got a tag title run, to think about it. So maybe not even Breezango. Maybe just kind of somebody to throw into the tag team division to give anybody, you know, that's kind of either gunning for the titles or the champion, somebody to face. And they could still break them apart and use them as, the jobbers that they've been for years and years. So I don't know. That's kind of where I see it going. Do I hope it goes further than that for those two sake? Sure. I do. I'd like to, you know, I'd like to see what they could do and hopefully it develops and goes further. But at this point, I don't have super high hopes for it.
All right, Brian, go ahead.
Hey, Nate, I agree with all three of yourselves, Dante Chen fan as well. I just did a quick Wikipedia search. And Boa lost to Dante Chen on Level Up on April the 7th of 2023, obviously. So, you know, who knows how long this has gone back, but that's just a quick piece of trivia. The other question I have for you three gentlemen is, and I hope you all have a good night and everybody out there has a good night as well too. So fourth night of the deadline matches, and we've had the four Hall of Famers. Jerry Lawler was tonight. We also had Mick Foley, JBL, and Lita. So the three of yourselves, I'm wondering which one of those four, in your opinion, WWE Hall of Famers did the best when announcing the matches and being a little bit of being passionate about it. Again, I haven't seen Jerry Lawler's yet, but just reading your description, Kelly, I think I can bypass thinking he might have been the best. I liked Lita. I thought Lita did a really good job. And again, I'll hang on and listen to your answer. And I will also, of course, hype NXT 8 years back. It's going to be on this Saturday, where Mr. Kelly Wells and Tom Stout talk about NXT from 8 years ago. We're getting close to TakeOver London show that's going to happen. And there is a movie question, and the movie question is, this is, I'll hang on and listen, Kelly. Thanks a lot again. I appreciate it. And everybody have a really good night.
Thanks, Brian.
Yes, we thank you, Brian. And now I'm thinking about that question and almost to the point where I forgot what his question was for us, because I'm wondering what that could be. But
now that you've said it, I've lost it.
Yeah, I got it. Okay. So well, yes, it definitely wasn't Jerry Lawler. He was bland and passionless, and like he stood in front, he sat in front of a beige background and spoke like he was reading the phone book. I don't know. It was yeah. so dead. And he had the most lead time for this. He was really bad. If you had asked me beforehand, if you had said beforehand, this is who it's going to be, I would have said the best one in this context will definitely be either Mick Foley or JBL. I have to admit that I didn't see last week's show because my week was packed. So after I wasn't able to watch it at the time, I wasn't able to go back. But in the absence of JBL possibly being the best one, and I read the report, but I don't remember if he said how JBL did. I actually would have to pick Lita. I thought that she gave the most of the ones I saw. I like Mick. I thought he was fine, but he did kind of come off like he just got this information and was kind of glancing back at it. And I thought Lita's was a little more natural, which is not something I have said about Lita's delivery before, but I really liked her in this context, Bruce.
So unfortunately for me, I really hate having to say this. I think it was JBL because he actually gave reasons and justifications. And with Briggs, it wasn't much more than he reminds me of a young me when I was in the tag team and I had to break away and I became a wrestling god. Hey, that's a pretty big endorsement from someone like that. And, as I said, he brought up Carmelo Hayes and said he's done everything. He changed, he was the NXT champion. Now it's time for him to get back on top. So I feel like, unfortunately, because of just how much we don't like him as a outside of wrestling, well, he's inside of wrestling too. I think to me it was JBL, unfortunately.
Yeah, and this I gotta agree. Is what he brings, like this is, mm-hmm. this is that he's best at. So I'm not surprised it's him. He does have his place and he'll make you like him in that context just enough that you're like frustrated.
Yeah. I mean, that was the thing with everything Bruce just said, like he was exactly right. Like he actually spoke with conviction. He seemed like he was the one that was most prepared. But
or at least watching the product.
Or and watching the product. That's absolutely right. Because there was a couple other references that I want to say he made that to things that had nothing to even do with what was going on, if I'm not mistaken. But that was last week. I can barely remember what happened this morning. So so take that with a grain of salt. Regardless, though, I hate to say it, but I think it was JBL. But as Kelly said, he's going to give that for you. So Foley, I wish he's my guy. So I wish he was better, but whatever. Lita though, definitely a strong second.
Okay. Since we're there, let's talk about our second and third matches of the night. Those being Iron Survivor Challenge qualifying matches. Kalani Jordan over Kiana James in 10 minutes and 14 seconds. This is the longest amount of time they have given Kalani, I am pretty sure. And she acquitted herself pretty well, still working on smoothness, speed, things like that. Kiana very much settled into that slowing things down, cocky heel who postures quite a bit during her matches, doing a good job of that. Roxanne Perez settling into her heel role, doing heelish stuff to Kiana all the time. And like later on would go back. I understand you need a way to start a scene, but having a beloved underdog babyface walk into a locker room full of women who didn't frickin' ask and just go, if I can't be in that match, Kiana James can't be in that match either. Like, why didn't they just get up and slap her and be like, shut up. We didn't ask. We were talking. I don't know. They're doing Roxy dirty is all I'm saying. But Roxy helps Kalani defeat Kiana James, or rather helps Kiana James lose. But then, of course, she gets the news that there will be a last chance match, which we all predicted because we had four and not five Hall of Famers making these matches. Excited to see Kalani. The Iron Survivor Challenge, very much a match where
yeah, you could put all your top guys in there, but this is the kind of match that can really elevate somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, in a single night. So love the choice to put Kalani in there. Eddie Thorpe versus Bron Breakker. Oh, this is just my kind of thing right here. Eddie with a taped up ribs that just serves as a target for a guy like Bron Breakker. And what a beefy, beefy match this is going to be, this Iron Survivor Challenge, because Bron Breakker wins this with a spear, kind of out of nowhere. Eddie Thorpe scraping and clawing and fighting his way back into this match, but cannot, with the injury especially, cannot deal with one final blow from Bron Breakker. So Bron joins Dijak, Josh Briggs, and, oh, let's say Gallus guy. Joe Coffey, right? Is it? No, Joe Coffey's in the second chance. Who was I missing?
Yeah. You're missing Trick, right?
Right.
Oh, yeah.
He's doing a whole thing. I shouldn't be forgetting this. But anyway, Bron over Eddie. So there you go. We have two more people in there, and we've got two four-ways next week for Bruce to cover. Nate, why don't you go ahead on these two qualifying matches?
Yeah, so yeah, I'll start with Kalani Jordan Kiana James match. This definitely was the longest match Kalani Jordan has been in, at least singles match, to my knowledge anyway. Like you said, I think she did a fair job. I mean, there were certainly signs her still, learning her craft and whatever, but for where she is on a developmental show, she's going to be fine. She's going to be just fine. I really one of the things that I really wanted to point out, you already said, was Kiana James. I like the role that she's kind of finally settled into, because you could tell there were a few points in the match where Kalani Jordan, she's, I don't know, maybe either just amped up or it's lack of knowledge or, kind of just being so new in the ring. I don't know, but you can tell Kiana James, slow things down and kind of, get a little bit more out of what they were doing. So, props to her there. Roxanne Perez. I don't know. I'm kind of okay with this random turn. It does seem a bit weird, but like I've said this for a long time, even back when she was the champion, Roxy was the champion. There's just something about her. Like, I like her, but I want to love her. Everybody else seems to, and for some reason I don't. And I don't know what it is. And maybe a heel turn will do it. It worked kind of for Cora Jade. It's not like I'm in love with Cora Jade, and I whatever. I'm okay. She's just fine. But maybe something like that'll work for at least for me with Roxy. She's kind of gotten, I feel like she's gotten really stale. Her whole gimmick is she's Booker T's girl, she's going to try her hardest. And I feel like she needs to evolve and do something a bit more than that. So even if it's a bit of a weird turn and there's not much there yet anyway, I'm okay with it because I feel like she needed to do something there. Thorpe and Breakker. I thought this was great. I'm not a huge Bron Breakker fan, but I don't know, man. Maybe I am. I dug this. Like, Bron, he beat the crap out of Eddie, but Eddie kept coming back. Wouldn't necessarily, really wouldn't quit up until the very end. Like, it got that spear, spear out of nowhere, as Kelly said a bit ago. I didn't really think Thorpe had a chance. I maybe a slight chance, but where they gave especially where they had the taped up ribs from everything last week. Didn't seem like it was going to be favorable that Thorpe was going to be walking away here, victorious. Plus Bron,
he's kind of one of the golden children in NXT right now. So getting him into that Iron Survivor Challenge, I think is that's going to be interesting. It's going to be fun. It's kind of almost like Brock Lesnar going into the Royal Rumble like a few years back. Well, let's say a few years ago. It was a little more than a few years ago at this point. It's going to add just kind of that extra level of intensity to the match that I don't know if it necessarily needed, but it's welcomed. So, yeah, there we go.
Bruce, on the Iron Survivor Challenge matches and whether the Iron Survivor Challenge is a really stupid name and needs to be shortened into something much cooler.
Yes.
Yes, on that last part. Going back to how earlier in the night they had videos for the three returning champions, I like how they had the explainer video again, just reminding people how it's going to go. Those of us who were here for it last year, and I think I was the one who covered it during the show for the report. We know how it goes, but still, if they're getting more people to watch than they had last year, so going over this is not a bad idea, and making sure you keep going over is not a bad idea. Let's start with the Kiana James Kalani Jordan match. Kalani Jordan keeps improving. Her improvement is very, very, it's not startling, but it is still quick. And it's good to see that, especially on a night when they show Nikita Lyons, it's good to see someone that they show that has improved and keeps improving, as opposed to regressing or stagnating or just kind of being happy with the spot they're in. So I like that we saw that from Jordan. Kiana James is great. I keep putting over how I called her as one of my breakouts or one of my dark horses from the first breakout tournament, her and Callan Henley. And this show was heavy with both Henley and Kiana James, so good for both of them. I like the role that Kiana James is in. She really seems to relish it. And beyond that, she has a good moveset for this. I think it's also the first time, correct me if I'm wrong, but that someone kicked out of the 401k, her finisher. I think Jordan kicked out instead of her pulling her up, but a lot of stuff happened tonight. But that Iron Survivor Challenge is shaping up nicely. You have a lot of new faces, or at least people who can, as you said, Kelly, use this as a jumping off point, right? So it can become sort of like a, in a sense, I'm not saying it's the same thing, but NXT can use this in the same way that Raw, SmackDown, those shows use for a Royal Rumble victory or something like that. And so propel somebody, make them a star, give them the title shot, usually have them win, only certain cases have them lose. But moving to the men's side, like you said, it's going to be a beefy one. And Dijak tweeted last week, this match tall AF, because Tim, Trick, all the other people you said earlier, and you add Braun, he's not tall, but he is wide and big. So it's a different strategy than they had last year, which I think had the high flyers, because I think they were trying to get over the match first. And now that we know how it's going to go, we're about to get a different version of what this match can be, although people like Dijak do take to the top rope and the aerial side of things quite often. So the match itself with Eddie Thorpe, I thought coming into this match, if you didn't have the injury angle with Eddie Thorpe, then this would have been the perfect spot to have him go over Breaker some way, you know, quick roll up, just something, maybe break the post for a spear, hitch the post instead, something like that. But because they had the ribs taped up, didn't make any sense for Thorpe to win here, especially against Breaker, and have Breaker in the match, it adds a bit of, I guess, legitimacy to the stakes of the match involved, not just having the Hall of Famers pick you, but he's a former champion, two-time champion, and he held that title for a year, essentially. So you have him added to the match, and the fact that he can get back to that title with just having a victory, I think it really gets over that this is not just a gimmick match as a gimmick match, but it has high importance, and there's stakes involved that people like Bron Breakker, a former champion, want to win. So all in all, I think, you know, we're not going to get five-star classics out of these matches, but these matches were effective in what they set out to accomplish. And I think the match itself at Deadline is shaping up to be an intense card, an intense set of matches, but in a different way they were from last year because of the wrestlers involved and their styles.
Baron Corbin sure is picking on Ilya Dragunov, going at his family, making Ilya just really getting under Ilya's skin so that he misconstrues everything everybody says around him, including Nathan Fraser, a really, really good opponent for a dominating dude like Ilya Dragunov, because he can ragdoll all over the place for Ilya's intense offense. Nathan Fraser did no offense until 2:25 into the match, and I don't know how that sounds, but that is a long time for somebody to get no offense in this day and age. Like, it just doesn't happen anymore. You got guys, especially right away in the match, just trading stuff immediately. Nathan got nothing for 2:25 and then still didn't get much. Ilya just flattened him in the end and was going to shake Nathan Fraser's hand, but then the Tron came on. Corbin went at him and at his family again. He says, "Hey, I'm sorry, I'm on the Tron." He didn't say the Tron. That's what I say still to this day. He said, "But this is how I know you talk to your family, so you're probably used to it." So Corbin, just a crap disturber, as always. And you know he loses this in the end, but he's so valuable being in this role. Dragunov over Fraser in 5:23. And this is one of those matches where it's not necessary worthy of being on a PLE, if the PLE isn't being sold with a super awesome gimmick match, but this PLE is being sold with a super awesome gimmick match. So, Bruce, on Fraser versus Dragunov and all of the Corbin surrounding it.
All of the Corbin surrounding it. That's hilarious. Yeah, really hard hitting match. Dragunov was out there even more intense than usual, which is saying something considering how intense he usually is. And you can tell he's wound up, his character's wound up, because he took a offhand comment that really wasn't bad, just kind of stating their preference as a personal insult, which led to the match. And he wrestled the match like he was insulted by what Nathan Fraser said. So it just kind of inevitable, or not inevitable, but, you know, Corbin's not going to win this. I would laugh they did have Corbin go over, but I think they're working a story where it can be believable because of how wound up and emotional Dragunov has been, and that could lead to his downfall. But more likely, it's going to lead to a moment in the match that gives you a false finish where Corbin gets so close but the Dragunov retains anyway. The match itself, just, I think he laid in 3 H-bombs at the end to Nathan Fraser, and that's just putting it in there. I think one is from at least the second rope or something. So a way to make Dragunov have something to do between now and the PLE, I guess, or the downtime he had between then and the PLE, because want to make sure that, yeah, you could put him on TV with promos or vignettes, but you also want to make sure that people have a reminder of what he can do inside the ring heading into the big event. And this was a reminder of that. And, you know, for Fraser, unfortunately, I don't think he's really going to move beyond where he's at, which is losing all of his big matches. And that might just be what his ceiling comes down to, at least in NXT. You know, that's not to say he can't do anything more if they do move him, but it just seems like they know they understand the commodity that they have with Nathan Fraser, and they kind of have a spot in a certain spot. I don't think they're going to have him moving on that.
Yeah, I agree. The one thing I could see him doing if he were to win a main roster title would be like in an odd couple tag team. Like, you got
sure.
Fraser and Dijak or something like that. And Dijak just throws Fraser into the opponents and whatnot.
Kind of like D'Angelo tonight.
Oh, yeah. When he even, you know, apologized to his boy and told him he loved him. touching stuff, but we'll get there, folks. Nate, on your mid-show main event.
Yeah, I'll be honest. I don't have a whole heck of a lot to add that Bruce didn't already say.
this it was a damn good match between Ilya Dragunov and Nathan Frazier. Ilya Dragunov came in swinging more so than normal, super intense, very intense. I think this is a great look for him as champion. Unfortunately, I think this kind of is also a big tell for, you know, Nathan Frazier. I don't think we're going to see him, you know, kind of ascend up the card any further than this. Maybe a little bit here and there to give him like a shine, so that way, you know, when he continues to lose, it doesn't just kind of seem like, oh, okay, he's losing again. But kind of is what it is there. But I somebody's got to do it. Somebody's got to be there. And, you know, if he can find himself a good career, looking cool, putting guys over, then what the hell? Why not? With Baron Corbin, I don't know. I mean, I like what they're doing with Baron right now. He's certainly not somebody that I'm going to, you know, specifically tune in for. It's okay. I think kind of like what Bruce said, you know, with this tonight and things with Baron Corbin, it's just kind of something for him to do right now through the Iron Survivor Challenge and all of that, you know, kind of to keep him looking strong and then, you know, kind of start building that story into Stand and Deliver, deadline's what, next week? So yeah, you know, another couple of weeks.
Corbin is the perfect opponent for your champion if the main event is not going to be for the championship.
100%.
Briggs, Jensen, and Fallon Henley all had a scene early on, and they ran afoul of Lexus King. Lexus King was also shown to be from NXT Anonymous, which I'm going to be honest, I'd forgotten about. And are we going to find out, NXT Anonymous? Do they have an answer, or is it just going to be something they use as a storytelling tool for a while and then realize, oh, yeah, we got to do something
Cole.
With this? There you go. Alexis was there. We don't know if he's the one who attacked Trick Williams, and I still think we're going to find out that he's not. But he was there. We know he was there. We can place him at the scene, folks. So we know that the thing earlier on with Briggs and Jensen, there's just always a little bit of tension with Briggs and Jensen. They just can't help themselves. And that's what they did here. But if Briggs is going to be a good singles wrestler, and it seems like maybe he is, maybe you do it. But where does that leave Jensen? I think that
kind of the company.
Yeah. I'm a little worried. Yeah. Lexus King versus Brooks Jensen. What's your semi-main? 8 minutes and 16. I mean, call it semi-main, call it death spot, I guess. Call it what you will. 8 minutes and 16 seconds. Lexus King does defeat Brooks Jensen. Lexus King does a lot of rest holds, folks. He can do those. Not thrilling stuff, but maybe not meant to be. I don't know. I want this to be progressing faster than it is for some reason, but it's just not okay. Lexus King over Brooks Jensen in 8:16 and whatever came before Nate.
Yeah, so like, I don't know. I'm with you. Like, I'm torn on Lexus King right now because I want to like him. I like the idea of the character and I sort of like the presentation. I even down to the ridiculous throne. You know, in his entrance, like, I don't know. I kind of like
he's
that.
The king.
Yeah. Yeah. Partly it is partly because, you know, in 2K24, assuming he has an entrance, I've got an idea for my buddy's entrance, but so I'm a little biased there too, but still, I like it. I think it's a great look for his character, not just because he's a king, but you know, he's also, with the self, what's the word I'm looking for? He's like conceited, I guess.
A narcissist?
Yeah, I guess narcissist kind of it's not the word I'm looking for, but it works. I'll think of it like it's 3 o'clock in the morning and be like, oh,
arrogant.
Yeah. No, I don't know. But narcissist, that works. So, I dig this. The interference with, I think if you want to build him up as kind of a I guess, any sort of a threat, putting him against Trick and Mello right now is probably a good idea. I just hope it doesn't seem to bring down Trick and Mello. I don't think it will. So that's kind of where I am right now. I'm a little bit like, I wish I was higher on Lexus King. It just, there's something missing. I don't know what it is. Even down to the delivery, you're talking about like breast holds and things like that, which I think is deliberate. I mean, he wants to try and build heat with people, so with the audience. So, you know, kind of not giving us anything that's too flashy or, even though his wrestling style is nothing like his father's, nothing that they don't want to give us anything that's going to remind us of Brian Pillman. So I understand kind of where they're going with it, but I think it's going to get old quick. I don't think it's going to get over with people that way. I'm hoping it's going to be more of a, or not hoping, I'm thinking it's probably going to be more character work that winds up getting this particular character over, but we'll see what happens.
I think it's as simple as no aspect of him is dead in the water, but every aspect of him needs work.
Every aspect's treading water.
Yeah. Bruce.
Yeah. So with Lexus King, with the whole NXT Anonymous video and then his, to Trick, it's almost like, or his words to Trick and Mello 3 weeks ago, was it? Kind of insinuating that to make an impact, you go after them on top or whatnot. It does, they're setting a lot of red herrings here for it to be King. Although I did say if it's not Wesley, I do think it's King, because you want someone to debut as an impact. Well, I mean, it's like they took the words right out of the storyline right out of their mouth. So, although it probably will end up being Hayes because of everything they've, all the tension they've built between them. I think the reason why we're a bit, why we're not kind of catching on that quickly with him is because in terms of improvement, in terms of it getting better, we've been spoiled with a lot of the people in NXT over the last year or so, from everybody from Tiffany Stratton, all that, to everyone we just talked about tonight in terms of their improvement, Kalani Jordan being right on top of the list, right? So, in that regard, he's coming at a bad time when everybody who's come in has seemingly just improved drastically from the first moment they stepped into the NXT ring to what we see today. Granted, he's only been in the ring, what, 3 times now? Remember his match with Dante Chen, and I don't remember anyone else, but it's only been a couple of times we've seen him in NXT. And I do want to give him more time, and I do think he was better tonight. But as you said, he needs to work on, usually when I discuss pacing, it's about slowing it down, not going so fast and 100% every single time. He needs to speed it up a little bit, a little too deliberate. Reminds me a bit of the Randy Orton special when, you know, he still does it, but especially in the late aughts into the early 2010s, Orton was always just putting in the mid-match rear chin lock for minutes at a time. And I don't want to see so much of that in NXT, but you also need people who are more of your grinders, and not everybody has to have, you know, a more high fly or impact style. I think the other issue is that people are going to compare him to his father no matter what they do. And his father's style being, especially in the early 90s, was so revolutionary, right? It was so different. And for him, his son, it's not the same, right? The style is completely different. He's much more of a grounded wrestler trying to grind out victories. So there's a bit of that. Now, the tension with Briggs and Jensen that you discussed earlier, that's, I think they're just continuing that from JBL's announcement of Briggs as in the match for when he faced Carmelo Hayes in the Iron Survivor Challenge qualifier, because as JBL said, you know, he reminds me of me, and I was in a tag team, I had to break away. Nate and I discussed the the match where they lost and Fury was fired or he had to retire, one of the two. And that set JBL off to become, while he was a long-range champion, I think he's still the lowest grossing champion of the modern time. So not that that's the biggest deal, but at least he got that run. And so I also mentioned with Nate a couple weeks ago that Josh Briggs is a former Evolve champion, I think two-time Evolve champion. And he was signed as a singles wrestler, and then getting him into the tag team is basically how they kept him on TV. But he does have that potential. And I mean, he's kind of like a Dijak. When Dijak was first coming into NXT, he has as much high-flying ability, but he definitely has more of a stiff style that could work with his size. And that pedigree he has, I guess, also leads me to believe that if they do move him to Raw or SmackDown, especially with Triple H being the one running those shows, and he's the one who signed Josh Briggs, that Briggs definitely has a brighter future. He's one of those where he might do better on Raw or SmackDown than he ever did on NXT. And we've seen a couple of those. More likely, we've seen wrestlers who did better on NXT than they did on Raw or SmackDown, but that was before Triple H took over. So it'll be interesting to see how he does as they move forward. But yeah, with Jensen, I'm just not, there's not much there. Fallon Henley, we're seeing a lot more character development and sort of, I guess, confidence in her role. And it's good to see that because it felt like for so long that she was the lackey to those two. And now it kind of seems like she's the one that's kind of the head of the three.
Yeah, I mean, she's the one yelling out, yeehaw, bitch. So,
doing a perfect Tiffany Stratton impersonation on Halloween.
Yes, indeed. Carmen Petrovich got her first semi-extended talk segment pre-taped because she is young, and it was there. Her match with Ariana Grace was shortly later. Ariana Grace is glorious and magical and wonderful, and something was wrong with her gear because she fiddled with it throughout just about the whole match. But what are you going to do? She goes over Carmen Petrovich in 9:03. This was pretty good. The gear stuff notwithstanding, and we did miss some of this for commercial. But Carmen Petrovich, it would be hard to advance this much in talent in this short of amount of time to the point where I want to chalk her first match up to jitters. To fear, but even the second one was like, this ain't great, but it sure isn't that first match. it was a really, really big step up today. And Ariana, of course, doing great character work. Speaking of which, Joe Gacy doing great character work, doing a selfie video under the, like, it was a great reveal where we didn't know where he was. And then he shows us, like, the skirt of the ring, and you realize he really did this moments ago underneath during one of the matches, and he pounds on the ring above him and says, good luck up there. And I just want to know which match it was and watch it back and see if I can be like, oh, that's where those pounds are happening, because nobody's taking a bump, but I'm hearing bumps. So, and then afterwards, Alicia Taylor wants to ring the bell and say who won, but there's no bell, so she just says it. Joe Gacy just goes, he's so excited about this. All smiles, ringing the bell over and over from the stairs in the crowd. Ariana Grace trying to, I will never get sick of her trying to keep it in the beauty pageant context. Yeah. and failing because something is annoying her. It's funny every single time. I love her. I love her. I love her. Dakota Kai, watch out. Bruce, go ahead.
Yeah, as you said, it would be hard to have some worse matches than Petrovich did the first two times out, especially that first time. But this was much better. This was best match on the card, but there wasn't anything on in this match besides the adjusting of the top for Ariana Grace, where you were like, you know what, there was something there that needs to be fixed, or, oh, that was clunky. It just seemed to go much better. I think the big thing was Petrovich's offense actually seemed like it was hitting and landing effectively, as opposed to her first two matches, where it just seemed like she was hesitant to use that third-degree black belt in karate, as they said tonight, to its effectiveness. And I compared her to Lola Vice at the time because they both had that martial arts background, and Vice, I felt like, had been doing a much better job of incorporating that into her offense. And I think we're seeing that with Petrovic, and good for her. Although, it's just, this goes back to Roxanne Perez, too. NXT does a really good job in the women's division of making the faces be the heels. And I just feel in her video, it was good. It was okay, you know, in terms of getting her some time and saying stuff. But she was saying, you know, good things, the right things. It just came off very heelish to me, or at least, if not heelish, more of a, almost kind of in a jealous stroke. So NXT has an issue with that. Back to Perez, I just hate the ringing the bell trope in matches from people. It just annoys me to no end. That aside, Gacy was great here. Not just in the promo and having it done underneath the ring. I wonder how long he was actually down there, considering how early they let people into the building. But then running out with the, getting the bell, running out with it. And then from the crowd after the match, after a bit of a delay, ringing the bell over and over and over and over again to annoy Ariana Grace, as you were saying. So who knew that? I mean, we knew. It's just he was so sapped by having to do or be the leader of Schism that it's really refreshing to see him revel in something that is more like what we knew he could do and what we knew that he wanted to do. So all in all, this match was a match that advanced basically two different angles. So good for three different characters, possibly two different angles. So good for everybody involved.
Nate?
Yeah, I mean, Ariana Grace, I agree with you 100%, Kelly. I love the fact that she's just almost cosplaying, role-playing this beauty pageant character and wants to try and stay in that world the entire time. She's one of those characters that is really, really starting to grow on me, and I wasn't quite sure where it was going to go or what the ceiling, and I'm still not sure what the ceiling is here. I don't think it's got a high ceiling, but maybe it does. And maybe she's going to surprise us. And I don't know. It's fun. It's really fun. Petrovic, I was, again, like you guys, very surprised at her performance here tonight. You know, the first couple matches we saw her in, excuse me one second. The first couple matches we saw her in, they were nothing to really write home about. So, you know, the fact that tonight this match here was like more than passable between these two. I kind of, again, yeah, I chalk them up to a fluke, you know, did some jitters or something, you know. Maybe she'd never worked in that size of a ring before, you know, and so her timing was off. I who knows? So there's, you know, there's definitely that. I think, you know, like you guys said, I think everybody in the match here tonight certainly got elevated. Joe Gacy, I absolutely love what he's doing right now. You know, I think we all kind of, you know, like Bruce just said, we all kind of knew he had it in him. You know, we're not, I mean, his wrestling is still probably going to be the same. You know, he's not my favorite wrestler, but he's certainly, again, passable. But this gimmick right now, I think, is fantastic. I mean, he's like losing his mind. The close-up promos, you know, and again, very lofty comparison, because this is my probably one of my, if not my favorite promo of all time, but I get a lot of like ECW Mick Foley, like Kane Dewey promo vibes from it. You know, it's a little unhinged, you're up close in his face, but I feel like there's a lot of inspiration that is probably being drawn from other promos too, but probably some of those ECW Mick Foley Cactus Jack promos there. So all in all, thumbs up.
You can email us at pwtorchnxt@gmail.com. We got two emails here. I'm going to do these, and if they don't clean up what few things we've got left to talk about, then I'll see what we've got to talk about. This is from Azan White. Hello once again, NXT gang. Number one, are Chase Yu's actions spoofing Michigan Wolverines football's recent actions, and does Duke Hudson's history as a poker player factor into the story? I think that the Michigan stuff is, I mean, there's no shortage of malfeasance in college football. It is amazing how much crime there is in college sports. And how many issues there are like this. I don't know if this is directly related to Michigan.
I say no.
My instinct is to say no also, but they're probably looking at the Michigan situation and being like, that's a bit of serendipity. Duke's history as a poker player. I did not consider that, but when it was about gambling, I should have. So before I go to the other guys, I'll read the other two questions. Number two, what do you think about Cameron Grimes' role on SmackDown? What role? He has shown more tonight than he has during his entire run on that show. And, of course, this is what he is he's saying with this question. Yeah, they clearly haven't decided what exactly to do with him, in which case I would prefer him to be completely off TV rather than just on occasionally losing meaningless matches. Number three, Joe Gacy has makings of being the next Dean Ambrose type face in NXT. Lofty, but I don't hate that comparison. Bruce on this.
Yeah.
So the Cameron Grimes thing, yeah, there I agree with you. Dean Ambrose, that is a bit lofty. I'm not sure if Gacy is going to play face. I mean, eventually, of course, they could, but ooh, and then what was the first part of the email again? I got thrown off by the...
Chase Yu and the spoof.
Oh, yeah. So initially when this stuff happened, I mentioned that, oh, I think this could be inspired by the Michigan scandal. But that would only be the case if it was a match-fixing thing, because the Michigan scandal is about stealing signs and using that to propel your program and gain victories, as opposed to what it was tonight, which was debt and probably gambling debt, if I heard Andre Chase correctly. And I do think a lot about Duke Hudson's history as a gambler and how he had to shave his head because he lost to Cameron Grimes, and this was when Cameron Grimes was at the height of his million-dollar man sort of gimmick and association. And I think that was during the height of the pandemic too, when there were no people in the audience. So a lot of stuff has happened since then, but I've been along for the ride. It would be a good callback and a nice little fan service for those who have been there for the entire time that Duke Hudson's been there. And there was a time when, you know, it didn't look like Duke Hudson was going to be long for the promotion, but yet he's still here. He's the MVP of Chase Yu. And he's seemingly playing again into another big angle. And in that case, good for him. He is talented. I think he's bigger than a lot of people give him credit for. And he has a good style in the ring. But I don't think it's Michigan inspired. I think it's just more gambling inspired, which is going to be any number of college scandals throughout history.
Nate?
Yeah, I mean, as far as like, the sports stuff goes, like, yeah, you guys would be better to speak to that than me anyway. So I don't know, you know, in terms of like Duke Hudson's poker, like that poker history, like that playing into it, I didn't even think about that. Cause I mean, they've brought that up before. I mean, he had a poker gimmick for a little while before this. Now that I think about it, I kind of completely forgot about that. So maybe, or maybe it's just a subtle nod. I mean, who knows? Cameron Grimes, his role on SmackDown is, man, I almost just wish they'd bring him back to NXT. Just let him do his thing in NXT. And you know, I don't know. I don't know. Because even his last few months in NXT, maybe 6-7 months in NXT, he wasn't doing a whole heck of a lot. And show up here and there, but then almost like fizzled up to the main roster. It wasn't really like any big fanfare that I can remember anyway.
So yeah, I don't know, either that or like Kelly said, keep him off TV entirely and then, you know, re-debut him 6 months down the line or something and give him something to do. 'Cause man, that's such a waste of talent as far as I'm concerned. Joe Gacy, next Dean Ambrose type face in NXT, super lofty comparison, I think, but I don't hate it. I don't know, again, yeah, I don't know if this character is necessarily going to lean face, but I think this type of a character, it's probably that if the more I don't want to say demonic because it's not demonic, but the more like evil this character kind of leans in and psychotic, crazy, I guess those are better adjectives. Kind of the more that becomes like kind of leans into that, I think people are going to go through a cycle where they kind of hate the character, they love to hate the character, and then they really love to hate the character so much that he becomes a natural babyface. I could totally see that very easily happening with this particular character. So we'll see what happens. But there are those three questions.
Kevin Catani writes, salutations, gents. I hope this email finds you well. Woo, what a main event. Seeing the former North American champs in there with Wes Lee was such a fun watch. I found myself going down memory lane with each of those guys, and it was cool to see them all in one place battling it out. The ending was a little cheesy, getting Bronson out of the way, but the action was solid. While Johnny has a defined role with DIY back together on Raw, what do you all think about Grimes coming back for a stint in NXT? I don't see any glaring cons to that idea, do you? Lastly, now that Stax and D'Angelo have successfully defended again, where do you see the story going? Who is next? Is it time to move the belts? Thanks as always. Go VIP and listen to 8YB. Office hours are now over. The Professor, Kevin P. Catani, PhD. It was a fun watch. Getting Bronson out of the way was contrived, maybe, but he does have an actual thing going on with Ivar that was continued on Monday with a double countout, so I didn't dislike that. Also, the way that they take the big guys out of these matches is almost always a great big spot destroying a table and then a whole bunch of guys just piling on. Like, it's almost always a table spot that takes out the big one. So having something different here and having Ivar ruin it for him this way, I actually prefer to that because I didn't see it coming, even if maybe I should have, because I watched Raw live for the first time in a long time. As for cons for Grimes coming back to NXT, I am going to say it's a pretty big con. Because it really wasn't that long ago that he was there. It would be a lot more like admitting defeat, putting it down there already, than any tire kicking that you could do after a successful run that starts to fizzle out. It would be an admission that they have nothing for him creatively. I'm going to throw to Nate, and then Nate, you can throw to Bruce. I might take a second here because now I have a naughty pet that is trying to eat plants. So I'll be back very soon.
Oh, and apparently might barf after that. So we don't, I don't know, animals tonight, animals. In terms of like getting Bronson Reed out of the way, I agree completely with Kelly here. I think sometimes, interference like that is, like the interference with Mello later on in the night, right? Like you kind of saw that coming. I had a feeling either he or Trick were going to show up during that match at some point. I didn't expect Ivar. Now, granted, I sort of watched live last night. I was playing games with D&D got moved to Monday last night. So I wanted to try and keep up with Raw because of, somebody came back to WWE last week or last night, or a couple nights ago. And I kind of wanted to see what was going on.
I didn't hear about this.
R-Truth, man. He's back.
My guy.
I know, man.
I love R-Truth. That should be the first match, by the way. I joked about that earlier.
But, you know, but yeah, so like I did not see, I don't remember seeing the match. Like Ivar, I remember seeing Ivar out there, but like, I don't remember, and Bronson Reed rather, but I don't remember like much about it. So yeah, I didn't expect it, but like, why not? You know, we've had a lot of stories between Raw and NXT and SmackDown for that matter, but I think mostly Raw and NXT kind of, you know, weaving and intertwining. And I'm cool with that. It almost reminds me in a way of how Sunday Night Heat used to be, where it like eventually Sunday Night Heat was just an undercard show, but originally Sunday Night Heat was like almost must watch TV. Like all of the stories wove into Monday Night Raw. And NXT, I'm not saying it's quite like that, but almost like it still has that developmental feel and that developmental mold. But we have so many main roster stars that are intermingling with NXT recently and have their stories coming with them that I really like it. It the brand split, like, kind of poo-poos on that a little bit, but I kind of like it. It gives you a reason to tune into NXT if you just watch the main roster, you know, because, oh, hey, like, you know, cause they're going to show highlights on Raw of what happened on NXT. Like, oh man, I missed that, you know? I dig it, totally dig it. With Cameron Grimes, I hear what you guys are saying with it being like an admission of defeat, and I don't disagree. I don't know. I want to see him doing something rather than nothing. And if they don't have a spot for him on the main roster right now, then I don't know. Maybe I don't hate the idea of bringing him back to NXT and letting him be Cameron Grimes and doing his shtick and kind of reintroducing himself to the audience and maybe even reinventing the character. So when he does go back up to the main roster, there's a little bit, you know, more there for people to latch onto, hopefully creative to latch onto. But yeah, so, the Stax and D'Angelo thing again. Who's next? Who's next? Dante Chen and Bella. There we go. Bruce.
So when it comes to Cameron Grimes, I think the best thing to do is scrap the To the Moon gimmick and have him come back to our SmackDown with a much more serious and believable character. Cause I mean, it worked in NXT, but just because it works in NXT doesn't mean it should or will work on Raw or SmackDown. I think the To the Moon thing is just, and I know I'm sounding like Wade here, but it just, I think to me it's a bit too hokey pokey to be, you know, for the talent that he has in the ring, I think it's a bit too of an undercard gimmick. So I think the best thing to do with him would be to totally just keep him off TV for a bit, reframe his character, and then come back with him as some sort of serious kind of badass that he was, you know, on the independent scene and Impact a little bit. So I think that's what you should do. And then Stax and D'Angelo, I think the interesting part here was the ending when Stax basically said, you're taking one for the team. Or no, D'Angelo said, you're taking one for the team. And Stax said, wait, what? And then he just hip tossed Stax out of the ring and onto their opponents. And I think what they're doing here is we've all been saying for a long time that the person that we see with the potential is Stax, much more than D'Angelo. And so I wonder if this is going to be the start. And, you know, we've even discussed it before how the person that set D'Angelo up, we're like, oh, this could have been Stax. I'm wondering if this is the start of what's going to end up being a feud between the two. And yeah, it's a bit similar and a bit close to Trick and Mello, but I think they can work a way around it to make it seem a bit more in their own world and different enough from Trick and Mello that what they do between the two not only feels different, but is a great way to elevate stacks.
Little things that we didn't cover yet. Tony D and Stacks in the opener defeated Angel Garza and Humberto Carrillo. Good match, 12-27, but nothing to say about it. They didn't really linger, and they just had a match. American Alpha, they're starting a thing with a six-person match against Metaphor. So Metaphor minus Jakara, American Alpha minus Tozawa, and they'll have a six-person match next week that I'm sure will be very humorous and very fun. Mackenzie Mitchell was trying to talk to Lyra Valkyria. Tatum Paxley showed up, and who did she talk to first? Fallon Henley? No. Who said?
I think it was just in the back when Roxanne was doing the little interview thing, and then she made a mention of Roxanne and that she's going to go after her, I think.
Well, yeah, Tatum Paxley showed up behind the curtain, but Lyra was trying to talk to a wrestler. Yeah, it was Fallon Henley.
Right, Lyra, yeah. Oh, right.
And Fallon goes, did you invite her, or is she with you? She's like, no, she's definitely not with me. So I guess they're doing something with Tatum, finally.
Well, they had been doing this character with her, but I think so they had to take her off TV.
Oh, right, yeah.
But she was doing sort of this deranged character bit after she got a diamond mine.
You know, considering how in the back and, like, kind of in shadow she was and everything and how long she's been gone, the announcers could have done us a solid and said, what is Tatum Paxley doing back there? So we didn't have to, like, search around and ask each other who that was. Well, that is always possible. Wesley talked to Mackenzie Mitchell. It's a great friendship, gang. They're homies. They slapped hands.
Yeah.
It was touching. Nikita Lyons is coming back. Okay, so on all of that stuff, Bruce.
Vic said the women's division is about to get a whole lot better. I said, a whole lot better? Says effing who? Like, what? The next time she has a match where someone or herself doesn't get injured will be the first time I've seen that happen. We talked about D'Angelo and Stax already. I don't know if you heard the tail end of what I said, Kelly, about I think this is leading to a feud between the two because of what happened at the end of the match with the hip toss over the ring. And the Tatum Paxley thing, I'm glad to see her back because I've always been a bit high on Tatum Paxley. I think that there's something there. I don't know how high she can go. I'm thinking not further than mid-card, but I think she has a place, and it's good to see her back, and hopefully she's no longer injured, that's what I'm assuming, and that she just picks up right where she left off beforehand.
And Nate, I guess the only thing that I'm going to really add, because we've either talked about everything that I want to talk about, or I can't remember the other points, Booker T, man, you got to learn how to pronounce the names of the people in the ring.
Carrillo.
Carrillo.
And I think everybody was saying Kalani Jordan instead of Kalani Jordan tonight, too.
Yeah.
And Booker is normally trying to keep Vic honest. Booker has no trouble with Fraser. None. But yeah. Vic still can't say it.
You know, and I don't know. So that stood out to me like big time tonight. Other than that, don't really have a whole heck of a lot more to add. So there we go.
I believe that is our show, folks, unless you guys noticed anything else that I forgot to write down. But I think I got it all. I'm Kelly Wells. You can find me on social media at Spooky Milk or at spookymilk.games, Nate.
You guys can check out the stuff I do at natelindberg.com for the links to the stuff for the Torch and links to my YouTube channel where we kind of take a therapeutic look at role-playing games. I also do NXT hits and misses for PLEs, so I'll be writing one for Deadline. Check that out on Torch and VIP.
And Bruce?
Only thing I'll add, because Booker T was brought up, is that during the King Jensen match, Booker T was apoplectic at the fact that Jensen was out there with his tag team partner, Fallon Henley, the face, out there with people for a singles match. And I just thought that was a nice little touch, considering Booker T used to be a tag team wrestler as well. So aside from that, you can find me at B_Lee253, and my report for next week's Go Home show with the two last chance matches will be up at the Torch and the VIP side, and will be updated at every commercial break.
All right, folks, that is it, and we will see you in 7. Cheers.